Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. Got a very interesting man, Nick Adams, on the line with me right now. Nick is a best-selling conservative author. He is a Fox talking head. He is an American from Australia who lives in Austin, Texas. Very interesting man. He has written a book that will be out within the month on Amazon and all the normal booksellers also. It's called Trump and Churchill. Nick addressed our book club earlier this week. Our members were very, very excited to hear from Nick. The book is fascinating in the sense that when you look at Donald Trump and Winston Churchill on the surface, you would think that the two may not be very similar, but actually they are incredibly similar, number one, and number two, they will probably go down as two of the greatest leaders of the century. Mr. Adams, tell us about the book, sir.
Al, it's a pleasure to join you. Look, this is a really interesting book. It's one that I think all of your listeners will really enjoy. It's written about two men, both consequential, unique, and historic, both, in my opinion, the two greatest leaders in world history. Churchill conquered the Axis powers. President Trump is conquering the swamp. Their unorthodox approach to domestic and international relations rescued Western civilization. That's why both will be remembered. And in my book, Trump and Churchill, Defenders of Western Civilization, available on Amazon right now, actually, Trump will be to the 21st century what Churchill was to the 20th. That's the conclusion that the book draws.
Well, you know, they both have taken on very formidable foes. Churchill obviously took on the Axis powers and beat them, which was absolutely the greatest thing that happened for England, I have to say, in the 20th century. And Trump is now taking on an enemy that very many people never even knew that existed. He calls it the swamp. What I call it is the movement that is, if I know they're Democrats, I know there's no problem with them on the surface, but I think they are absolutely ruining our country. And nowhere is that more evident than in the way they are totally non-supporting our president.
Well, Al, that's exactly right. There are lots of detractors, enemies, and critics of the president that are seeking to have his presidency fail. We have seen this constantly now over the last three, almost 4 years, and it is his Churchill-like qualities that is getting the president through. He doesn't conceal his true self or conform to expectations. He's confident, loves his country. He is intensely disliked, even hated. He's a clear thinker, a plain speaker. He's an alpha male. And in that sense, compared to Churchill, he's remarkably similar. Both stared down their enemies. Both endured battles with the political establishment wanting their destruction. And both followed predecessors that were astronomically weak and had the spine of a jellyfish.
Yep.
In Neville Chamberlain and Barack Obama, and that's only served, I think, to magnify the leadership qualities of both men.
You know, I would have to say one thing. I am amazed. I do daily editorials, as you know, Nick, in addition to the radio show, but I have to say that I am absolutely amazed that on the record, many of the leaders of the liberal progressive party, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, are to say that they are disrespectful of the man who holds the highest office in the United States. Nancy Pelosi tearing up a copy of his speech on, when you can't get more on the record than on a live video clip. I simply don't understand how people can be, I just have to use the very basic word, Nick, and the word is rude. I cannot understand how in the United States of America, politicians of the level of Pelosi and Schumer can act that way.
Yes, well, it does beg a belief. Unfortunately, though, they are acting that way. And just imagine if the president had the support of the other side, and imagine that the United States of America was unified It boggles the mind just how much can be achieved, because even with all of these people against the president, the media, Democrats, Never Trumpers, Iran, China, the deep state, just to name a few, he's taking them on and he's still winning. Before this invisible enemy came, the economy was booming. The employment rate was the best it had ever been. There was more fair trade. ISIS, al-Baghdadi and Soleimani had been pulverized. No president had ever done as much to protect Christians or Israel or life. So this is a very impressive president, and I write about this extensively in my new book, Trump and Churchill, Defenders of Western Civilization.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading it for sure, and I should be getting it any day now. Now, let me just ask you kind of another question, Nick. And the other question is purely and simply, how did you get involved? I've done a fair amount of background on you. You are a very successful conservative thinker, Fox News, et cetera, et cetera. How did you get involved in this philosophy, Nick?
Well, Al, look, I have always taken an interest in conservative politics, and both Churchill and Trump growing up were my idols. I read Churchill's speeches at the age of 8 upon instruction from my dad. My best friend in high school gave me a copy of The Art of the Deal. So I've admired both men for a long time. I found them as a source of inspiration. Both had a great impact on my worldview. I came over to the United States in 2009 on a speaking tour, and I found the American people to be fantastic, and I found the American culture to be most receptive to a young man with a dream and a lot of passion and a belief in instilling the founding values and principles of the United States to the next generation. So I've been very lucky to be a part of the American dream, and I wake up every morning and thank God that I'm here.
You know, Nick, I have to say, I'm a product of the 60s. I came of age, for lack of better terms, in about 1962. Vietnam was really starting to boil at that time. And I have watched the American society since then without missing a beat. And I have to tell you, for whatever reason, American society and we're a great country. We got great people here. There's no question about that. I'm a patriot, but I really hate to see the direction which includes absolutely no moral values. And Nick, I'm not just talking about, you know, the surface sexual values. I'm talking about fiscal values. When you have no values, either fiscally or morally, your country is simply not going to last. And I think that Donald Trump is, quite frankly, going to save it. Because I think people like you and I, sorry, Nick, are starting to wake up.
Yes, I'm with you, Al. I think there is a great awakening in the United States of America. I do think that history will view this president as a savior, swooping in 2016 when America was on the precipice, teetering on the cusp of debt-riddled mediocrity and a European-style socialism future. He came and he restored belief in America. He got America living up to its potential again. He inspired confidence. He was inspirational. I think that's how the Trump presidency will be viewed, and that's why I'm so sanguine about the prospects of Donald Trump winning the next election. And I think that he's going to be viewed like Churchill, as one of the all-time greats who defended Western civilization. Again, a point that I make in my new book, Trump and Churchill.
And we are going to highlight that book on our website. Nick, got to take a real quick commercial break. Ladies and gentlemen, I will be back in less than 30 seconds with Nick Adams, author of Trump and Churchill.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continuing on with KER Politics. Got Nick Adams on the line, best-selling author, Fox talking head, etc., etc. A very, very interesting man. We discussed his book in the prior segment. We're going to talk about that book again a little bit later on in this segment. But doing some research on you, Mr. Adams, I have to say that I find your views on political correctness to be exactly the same way I feel about them. I think political correctness, my man, is nothing more than a put-down of another person. Any comments?
Political correctness is an intellectual tyranny. It's a totalitarian ideology. It's a joking conformity. Albert strips us of our individualism, eliminates our patriotism, removes our self-confidence. And it's
right.
Transforming the American dream into the European nightmare. And what people don't understand, I've found in large part, is that political correctness is not merely an imposition on speech. It's much more than that. It's a cultural mindset. It's a mentality. It's an attitude that says that you should strive for mediocrity and not greatness, that you shouldn't color outside of the lines lest you be punished, that you should resent those that have differentiated themselves professionally, financially, or in some other fashion more so than you. In fact, political correctness mandates that success and achievement be a measurement of how much butt you kiss as opposed to how much butt you kick. And nothing could be more un- or anti-American than that.
Well, in my opinion, political correctness is a real detriment to many members of our society because it is basically condoning, in a very real sense, failure. And nobody could ever change my mind about that one, Nick.
No, I think you're right. Look, one of the reasons why I came to the United States of America, why I legally immigrated here, was that I wanted to be part of a country that prides.
Nick, wait just a minute. Wait a minute. You said legally immigrated to America. Nick, I've got video that's for sale of you running across the border with border guards chasing you, bud.
Well, look, let me tell you, as someone who went through the legal immigration process, it's not an easy process, Al. It's not an easy process, but I dotted all my I's, I crossed all my T's. It took me 4.5 years. It cost me north of $50,000 to get my Extraordinary Ability green card, but I got it, and it's been nothing but blue skies since, and that's because this is a culture that prizes bold, rejects timidity. It's one that really has a great antipathy, I think, at the heart and soul of it for political correctness.
You know, I have to tell you, I have a real problem with people who condone illegal immigration for a couple of reasons. Number one, my parents were legal immigrants from the Far East, point number one. Point number two, my daughter was very fortunate when she graduated from school at the University of Montana. She was very fortunate to get a couple of really good job offers from former clients of mine. It cost her $15,000 to legally immigrate into Canada. Why can't some other people down south do things the same way? Why do you have to condone breaking the law, Nick?
Look, I think that our reality is that the first act to join the country that you want to be a part of should not be to break the law. That shows a complete lack of respect and a complete absence of the kind of values that we really want in people. We want people to come to the United States of America, Al, that are going to come to make.
That's right.
And not take, to give and not receive, to join the place, not complain about it or change it. And we really need to make sure that they're the type of people that are coming. That's what both the president is doing. That's what Winston Churchill would have asked to be done, because otherwise this country is going to turn into every other place on this earth.
Well, this country was never meant by God to be just like any other place on earth. People come here because of the opportunity that is available, and that's not my humble opinion. That's my proud opinion, for lack of better terms. Nick, I want to switch subjects a little bit. I want to get back just a little bit. We've got about, 3 minutes left here. I watched Trump's speech on the coronavirus situation on April 13th, which was this past Monday. He called out the media and pointed out over and over and over again how they were absolutely printing on the record falsehoods about the way he handled the situation. Why don't we get a media that's responsible in this country?
Well, that's what we certainly need, because this invisible enemy stuff is just showing more and more just how much these people are rooting for this president's failure. You know, if you go and have a look, Al, at everything that's happened over the last couple of months, you find that Donald Trump has been right every step of the way.
Yep.
He was right to ban travel from China. He was right about the number of ventilators. He was right about hydroxychloroquine. He was right about the numbers receding when the warmer weather would come. And yet every single time he was derided for making either those decisions or making those public proclamations.
Yep.
And much to go back to our first segment, much like with Winston Churchill, who was also continually proven right over the course of time, I think that Donald Trump will be very much a Van Gogh president.
I have to agree 100%. You know, fortunately, one of my closest friends up here in our neighborhood is a retired Army intelligence guy. His name is Jim McKinney. Really, really a good guy. Probably my favorite person up here. Jimmy, to say the least, is very, very adamantly pro-Trump. He will be heading up the Trump presidential race for the entire county. I know we're on the same page when it comes to political opinions. Take another, just if you would, 1 minute and pitch your book.
Trump and Churchill, Defenders of Western Civilization, Al, is the book of 2020. It's got a foreword by Newt Gingrich. It compares the two greatest leaders in modern history, both men, unique, historic, consequential. Both are going to be remembered because of the unorthodox approach they took to both domestic and international relations. Both took on the political establishment and won. Both took on the media and won. Donald Trump will be the greatest figure of the 21st century, much like Sir Winston Churchill was the greatest figure of the 20th. This is a book that you must get if you want to have a clear understanding of the challenges that we are facing right now. This is something that I cannot stress enough how much we have to get this right, because if the domestic enemies within America win, the consequences for the world could be very similar to the threat Churchill faced in the 20th century. There are incredible parallels between the times and the men, and this book, Trump and Churchill, Defenders of Western Civilization, available on Amazon to be ordered, is essential for the clear understanding of the dangers for America and the world.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, from my friend Nick Adams.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in back to KER Politics. I have got a very sophisticated lady on the line right now. Her name is Dr. Carol Lieberman. She is a medical doctor specializing in psychiatry. She has also got other credentials dealing with her particular field that are actually significant. I have a question for you, Carol. A lot of people right now are claiming that what's going on with the action that the government is taking with the COVID-19 virus, they seem to be getting somewhat paranoid in the sense they are saying, is this the first step in trying to control the American people? Because let's just take a hypothetical example. Let's assume that China wanted to really infiltrate our country. Well, they couldn't do it using force. That just wouldn't work anymore. That's too obvious. But there are other ways to infiltrate a country. The best way to control a population, Carol, in my opinion, is what's going on right now in the United States. Do you have any comments on that, Doctor?
Well, you know, certainly as a psychiatrist, the last thing I would want to do would be to make people paranoid, which we are actually more susceptible to feeling, you know, with all of this lockdown. Now, you know, certainly it is a possibility. I mean, there is certainly still a lot of question about how exactly coronavirus started. I mean, the original thing was a wet market in Wuhan, and now, of course, there are more and more questions about the laboratory, certainly about whether it was at least very lackadaisical conditions, very sloppy conditions, where they were dealing with bats who had coronavirus. And there had been warnings put out by doctors or researchers about the danger of a leak. But, and yes, of course, then the ultimate is, did they do this on purpose? Was this a bioweapon? Now, you know, the interesting thing, though, is that, and certainly, I certainly don't want to be a part of making making there be any more xenophobia towards the Chinese, because it's not the Chinese people, you know, it's the communist government that would have, if they are behind it. But the perhaps more worrying possibility is that, you know, China or any other country couldn't do it on its own, in the sense that a lot of it has to do with our response. You know, yes, we aren't quite ready for a pandemic like this, and this would be a way, you know, perhaps the ideal way to take over America. But it is really in part the actions of governors and mayors that are making this more of a possible scenario. In other words, you know, and you have to actually, along with that, you need to wonder whether it isn't a foreign country that is trying to do this to us, but rather some segment within our country. And certainly it's not related to Trump. You know, he has been the voice of calm and against. I mean, he's telling people to liberate. So it's not Trump who is trying to lock us down or over the country. But the fact that there are so many governors and mayors who are putting us into isolation and taking away, you know, ruining the economy and calling people's jobs non-essential and so many other things, and locking people up like rats, where in fact, you know, the isolation and the loneliness and just the fact of isolation itself, it's not so much even anymore the coronavirus. That has, of course, that could be deadly, but as I was saying from the very beginning, the percentage, the fatality rate is really low, a lot lower than has been said at times. You know, it's really, it is more like the regular flu or even lower. But it's the sort of secondary damage. It's how people are reacting to it, how, you know, certain governors and mayors and so on are reacting to it, because isolation is bringing up more domestic violence, more child abuse, more physical and psychological illnesses, including suicide.
Yep. Well, not to mention the divorce rate. I understand the divorce rate is actually spiking a little bit because of that, which I find to be very, very sad. But what I have to ask you, Carol, as a layman, is every action has a motive. You know, everybody has a motive, okay? The Israelis have a motive. It's called defense. It's called, we want to save our people. Other people have motives that are just the opposite. Okay, my question here is, logically speaking, without getting emotional, what would the motive, for example, the governor of Washington State, who I have no time for, Jay Inslee, is on the record as saying President Trump is encouraging us to break the law. I find that to be a very, very offensive statement, personally. What would the motive be? Is it just the old-fashioned, I want to get as much power and I want to wield as much power as I possibly can? Is that the deal?
Well, yes, that's a big part of it. I think, you know, some of these mayors and governors, they have had this taste of power, you know, mm-hmm. and they want more of it. They're getting drunk on power. And a lot of it also is the politics, you know, that any way that they, I mean, you know, before coronavirus, any way that they could put down Trump, they did it, whether, you know, if he had a white Russian drink, for example, a cocktail.
Right.
Would mean that he was in with the Russians. So now it was sort of a natural thing for them, for people who are against Trump, to blame Trump for the coronavirus. And, you know, one of the things about that really bothers me is the hydroxychloroquine debate.
Yep.
I mean, that is so politically motivated. There are people who are not getting this drug, people who have COVID, who are not getting this drug because of politics.
And they should be. Is that what you're inferring?
Yes. But, you know, and there are, in some states, doctors are getting threatened to have their license taken away. I mean, I'm not saying that that's a panacea, but it has certainly worked in certain places. And for people who are, you give the patient a choice, whether it's with coronavirus or an operation or whatever, you tell them the risks and the benefits and you give them the choice. And there have been, you want to call them anecdotal, whatever. There's a professor in France who has done videos explaining how this works and his studies for why it works and so on. And patients should certainly have this option. And to take it away from them because of politics, you know, saying that Trump doesn't know what he's talking about, this drug doesn't work. You know, yes, maybe if for in certain studies where you give it to patients at the very end, you know, when they're dying, their last couple of hours. But there are, I heard a man on the radio the other day, I think in New York, who actually was somewhat on his last legs, or at least, you know, heading towards that. And he was given hydroxychloroquine and he has recovered. So patients should have the choice, just like they have the choice with other medications. But
right. This
is just an example of how political everything has gotten and how crazy everything has gotten and not really looking out for the best, what's best for the American people.
Dr. Lieberman, I have to cut you off here only because we have to take a real quick commercial break. I have to say one thing. I'm going to go on and on and on just for a second here. Please bear with me. I have to tell you, anybody who feels they have, in my opinion, a psychological problem, I really have to recommend this woman. And she's probably got a waiting list a mile long. But the fact of the matter is, Dr. Carol Lieberman has truly opened up my eyes, brought a ray of sunshine into regarding a situation that I thought was just absolutely insane. What she is saying makes all the sense in the world. And Dr. Carol, I truly appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome in here to wrap up KER Politics. I'm going to dedicate this particular segment to Out of the Box Jerry. The reason I'm doing that is because Jerry loaded our website Thursday morning with about 50 comments that were all in favor of what we're about to talk about right now. I suggested to Jerry that he really ought to run for office because that way he could get something accomplished. My comment to him was, why just bitch? Well, he's not. What Jerry did is he brought out what actually is happening in our society using the COVID-19 virus as a power grab. That's what Dr. Carol just said. I got Jimmy McKinney on the line right now, Lieutenant Colonel retired Jim McKinney. What's your view, Jimmy, about what's going on?
So I think the good doctor made two points. One, she talked about China and the influence that they have had and how responsible they are for this event? And is there something sinister about what they're doing? Is it some sort of a, you know, effort to undermine the nation? Was it a bioweapon? And the other piece of it was, hey, what about our own politicians and governors and some of these people that are actually reaching out and taking extreme measures to control people? On the first,
Jimmy, let me interrupt you. Let me just say one thing. And at least in the state of Washington, to a large extent, successfully control the population.
Certainly, yeah. There was a big pushback on Sunday. We had about 3,000 to 5,000 people that showed up in Olympia at the state capitol. They were protesting. A lot of them were armed. A lot of them were fed up, and they want to get back to work. With China in particular, so she talked a little bit about, you know, the lab and the improprieties there. But here's something that you need to consider. When the Chinese did shut down travel, you know, they did not allow information out on this virus. They gave false information, even when they knew it had human-to-human transmission. They gave false information. It is public knowledge. There was public statements that have proven it and a lot of documentation. And then the World Health Organization perpetuated that myth that there was no human-to-human transmission. And even some of our own doctors, including Dr. Fauci, had really downplayed the lethality or the potential problems with this virus early on. What they did, what the Chinese government did do, is they restricted travel outside of the Hubei province and outside of Wuhan internally in China because they knew how quickly and rapidly this spread. What they did not do is they did not stop international travel from Wuhan. And where do some of those international flights go to? To Milan, which is one of the most devastated locations for the virus, to LA, to Seattle, to New York, to Spain. Those flights carried the disease wide and far, and they knew it.
Jimmy, let me ask you a question. Now, it's coming to fruition right now. It's getting to be pretty well known that the mortality rate from COVID-19 at this point is, I don't want to use the word minuscule, because when you're talking about end of life, minuscule is not a proper word. Right. But because of the sampling errors, the sampling inefficiencies, for lack of better terms, were the Chinese aware of the fact that the mortality rate was as minimal as it is? Quite a bit under half a point, Jim.
Yeah, it's really hard to judge if they knew. Yeah. A lot of people didn't know, but they did have the genome identified very early on in this. Whether that was the initial genome for what was actually spreading is unclear. What is something people need to consider is whether or not what is actually spread is the same strain that started there. They may have been much more, and they acted like they were much more concerned about the lethality of it than is happening now. And yes, a lot more people have this virus than we anticipated, and it really has lowered their mortality, which is very good news. But right now, all we can judge is that they did close internal travel, but they let external travel go, which spread the virus very rapidly around the world.
Right. But it would appear right now, particularly after viewing what's going on in New York right now with the rate of infection there and the mortality rate, et cetera, this is definitely, as we've been saying now for the last, probably number of weeks, Jim, we've been saying, based on your research, that this is not the Black Plague.
It's not. But what we're seeing is politicians, primarily leftist politicians, still continuing to make it sound like it's the Black Plague.
That's right.
And it's damaging people. It's damaging the economy. It's really hurting individuals that at the lower end of the spectrum that don't have savings, that don't have a job that they can work from home with. The small businesses that are completely shut down. All the restaurant and service employees, they're the ones that are suffering most, and they're the ones that are most on the margin. And these politicians in the past have catered to them, but at this point, they're trying to control them. I think it's a very, very dangerous mistake and a dangerous precedent. And it is really dividing the country. Actually, the first time in my life where I'm really concerned about, and, you know, I mean, I was a young kid in the late 60s and the early 70s, but, you know, I never thought we'd come to civil war then. But at this point, I'm very concerned about potential, you know, people just being fed up with what's happening in some of these places. Not from a federal level, because it seems like the administration is being very cautious and very careful in defending people, trying to defend themselves and stand up for their own rights and stand up for the Constitution. But we've got a number of people that have just really ignored the Constitution. New Jersey governor said, well, you know, that's above my pay grade. I don't care. Publicly, he said that on TV. No, we can't ignore our fundamental principles. We can't ignore the First Amendment. We can't ignore freedom of assembly and to protest and to speak. And that's what we have. Powerful people in power that are attempting to shut down speech and shut down concern or even questioning these statistics and data. And that's what's been
just to interrupt here. First Amendment is incredibly important. That is what America is really built on. I want to say that what this situation has brought out to me, and again, I want to thank you, Jerry, for bringing this up in this direction. What it's shown me is not necessarily the evil nature of total society, but the evil nature of the progressives. They have done everything they can to get as much control of society as they can. And you know, Jimmy, our governor is a great example of that, okay? Belittling Donald Trump by saying Trump is encouraging us to break the law. All he's doing is trying to make himself and the Democratic Party look better. When all the cows come home, when the horses get back in the barn, this is going to come out to be a very, very different type of situation. But I got to tell you, I think the progressives have really shown their evil nature. Take it home, bud.
Yeah, Jay Inslee, governor of Washington State, he made a presentation yesterday talking about his plan to bring us back to the economy. Now, in Washington, we have flattened the curve over 3 weeks ago. We have not had hardly any deaths in the last week or so. I mean, we're at stable. And he's still saying we're going to drag this out for a long time. He's trying to gain control. And at the same time, he's creating fear. And like many of these governors in these progressive seats, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, they're actually yelling at people and telling them to shut up and not ask questions and not stand up for their own rights. Whenever you hear someone tell you to shut up and not ask questions, there's something wrong. And that's very, you know, that's what we're facing right now. People are doing, are looking at the numbers, looking at the data, looking at real science and saying, wait, what are we doing? We're killing ourselves. This is suicide. And oh, by the way, we're being taken advantage by the Chinese and we got to do something about it. But some of these politicians, in order to continue to smear, in order to continue to create fear, in order to continue to control, you know, to have power and create more power, are willing to go at any lengths to undermine us as a society. I think it's going to blow back. I've been saying it for a while. I really do hope that people actually get back on their horse, get back on the economy pretty quickly as the numbers get clear and we start moving towards a much more stable, and maybe by the end of the summer we're on our way towards an economic recovery.
What I would have to say, I hope you're right, but what I would have to say very clearly is the progressives have really shown, and I'm going to use two words that I don't like to use very often, and that is their very, very evil, evil nature. The president has handled this just fine, not the progressives.
See you next Got to week. Agree.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.